The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive.
Today we are wrestling with a real classic of American social critique. It's a book that, well, even though it came out way back in 1979, it feels incredibly relevant, almost prophetic, actually.
It really does.
We're diving into Christopher Lash's The Culture of Narcissism.
Yeah.
A pretty profound and, yeah, often uncomfortable examination.
It's a phenomenal source, definitely. And I think the first thing we need to get straight is what Lash means by narcissism here.
Yeah.
We aren't just talking about vanity, you know, or the clinical disorder necessarily.
Well, not just someone who loves looking in the mirror.
Exactly. Lash is arguing something much bigger, more structural. He's suggesting that this particular personality type, the one characterized by deep fragility, a constant searching for validation, profound self-absorption, this isn't just an individual issue anymore.
He argues it's become the dominant character structure, almost the rational way to be in modern Western society.
Wow. Okay. So let's unpack that. Our mission today, then, is to really get Lash's core argument. Why is it that, you know, despite having more stuff, more connections, supposedly, modern life often feels so anxious, superficial, fragmented?
Yeah. And if the culture itself produces and even rewards these narcissistic traits, then maybe we need to stop focusing only on the individual.
And start looking at the system itself, diagnosing the system.
Precisely. I mean, think about it. Lash wrote this before social media really exploded, before the whole quantified self thing, before influencer culture.
Right. None of that existed.
Yet his book gives us the language, the framework, to understand why so much of life now involves managing our image, performing wellness, living for, you know, the immediate approval of others. It's like a diagnosis of the modern soul.
It explains why sometimes chasing self-care feels less like actual healing and more like, I don't know, another job, a project that never ends.
Exactly that. It's a demanding project.
So before we really dig into the mechanisms he describes, maybe let's get a sense of the author. Who exactly was Christopher Lash?
Sure. Lash was a really influential American historian and social critic. He taught at the University of Rochester for many years, up until he passed away in 1994.
And importantly, he wasn't coming from a psychology background, right? He wasn't a therapist.
No, not at all. And that's a crucial distinction, I think. He was a historian first and foremost, looking at cultural trends, at social decay. He used tools from history, sociology, philosophy,
to diagnose what he saw as a kind of social sickness.
Absolutely. His real intellectual power came from how he synthesized these different fields. He combined social critique, some of it with Marxist roots, with history, and a really deep dive into psychoanalytic theory.
Like Freud.
Yes, Freud. But also later figures like Kernberg and Kohut, who wrote specifically about narcissistic personality structures. He wasn't just observing behaviors. He was trying to trace how these big historical and social forces were actually changing people's inner lives, eroding the private sphere.
I remember reading about his earlier work, Haven in a Heartless World. He was already critiquing how helping professions, therapists, social workers were sort of encroaching on the family's traditional role and autonomy.
Yes, that's right. He consistently pointed towards the structures, the systems that he believed were making people psychologically and socially unwell.
Okay, so that leads us right into the core thesis of the culture of narcissism. What exactly is this new personality type he identified? What does it look like?
Well, the central argument is that post-World War II, consumer capitalism didn't just change how we shop. It actively fostered a new kind of person, the pathological narcissist. And that word pathological is important.
Meaning it's not healthy.
Definitely not. It's characterized by this really profound inner emptiness, a fragile sense of self, a poorly defined identity. And because of that emptiness, there's this desperate ongoing need for external recognition, for validation, what psychoanalysts sometimes call narcissistic supply.
That idea of the inner void.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it sound quite dark. It's not about self-love or real confidence, then?
Not at all. It's actually self-obsession born from insecurity, constantly needing to see a positive reflection in the eyes of others. Lash, famously described as living in a hall of mirrors.
Just constantly checking your reflection.
And here's the critical insight, maybe the core of the book. Lash argues this fragile, validation-seeking self isn't just a random development. It's a rational adaptation.
Rational. How so?
It's the personality structure that makes sense, that helps you survive in a world that's become highly bureaucratic, very mobile, driven by consumption,
mm-hmm.
a world that has steadily chipped away at the older sources of meaning.
Like what? Community, tradition.
Exactly. Things like stable community, tradition, meaningful work, where you actually make something tangible. When those things fade, when everything feels unstable, focusing on managing your own psychic survival, your own presentation, well, that becomes a pretty logical strategy.
Okay, so if the personality is an adaptation, the system must be doing something to encourage it. Let's dissect those systems. Lash talks about the social invasion of the self, driven by therapeutic culture. This is where it gets really interesting for today, I think.
Yeah, he was quite critical of what he called the awareness movement, things like Garrettist, the human potential movement, a lot of self-help. He saw these not as solutions, but as symptoms of the underlying problem.
Symptoms? How? They seem aimed at helping people.
His argument was that they encourage this constant inward-looking self-scrutiny. They turn the self into a kind of project, something you have to perpetually work on, manage, improve, optimize.
But wait a second. Isn't self-reflection good? And doesn't therapeutic language sometimes help people, say, name abuse or understand trauma? Is he maybe being a bit too dismissive here?
That's a fair question. Lash wasn't necessarily dismissing the intent. He was focused on the unintended consequences. His concern was that this relentless focus on the self ends up instrumentalizing everything else, especially relationships.
Instrumentalizing, meaning using them.
Sort of. People start seeking connections primarily for what they get out of it, for personal growth, for emotional returns. Others become like tools in your own self-improvement journey.
Ah, okay. So genuine intimacy, the kind that requires vulnerability and maybe isn't always about growth, becomes scary.
Exactly. It threatens the carefully managed project of the self.
Yeah.
It feels risky. So you get this kind of defensive coolness instead. Relationships become more like emotional investments you track.
That makes a disturbing amount of sense. And this mindset, this language, it paved the way for what he called the therapeutic state.
Precisely. He argued that therapeutic language started to colonize everyday life. It began replacing older ways of talking about problems, moral language, ethical language, political language, with psychological terms.
Can you give an example?
Well, instead of discussing, say, economic inequality or unjust policies, the conversation shifts to the individual's mindset, maybe their scarcity thinking or imposter syndrome.
Ah, so the system avoids critique because the problem is located back inside the individual's head.
That's the core of the critique. And the people who administer this state, the managers, the therapists, the social workers, the HR departments, he gave them a label. The new paternalists.
The new father figures telling us how to live?
In a way, yes. Lash claimed they systematically de-skilled the public, and parents too. Made people dependent on experts for basic life decisions, for understanding their own feelings, for raising their kids.
Undermining real autonomy.
Exactly. Leaving the individual kind of psychologically adrift, always needing expert guidance. And this leads to one of his most cutting observations, actually a direct quote.
Let's hear it.
He wrote, "The modern manager, the psychiatrist, and the social worker, the new paternalists, understand that in order to rule, it is necessary to disguise power as therapy."
Wow, that really cuts deep. Disguise power as therapy. It captures that sense of subtle control, doesn't it? Power isn't overt commands. It's shaping how you think and feel, making you dependent on the helpers.
It's insidious because it feels like help, like care.
Okay, moving beyond the purely therapeutic sphere. Another huge factor Lash points to is the degradation of work in public life. You mentioned the decline of tangible skills earlier.
Right. Think about the shift from work defined by craftsmanship, making a thing, growing food, to work defined by managing information, bureaucracy, or people's perceptions. Your value isn't just in the output anymore.
It becomes about performance,
huh.
Managing impressions.
Exactly. And this is where narcissistic traits suddenly become economically adaptive.
How so?
Well, think about it. Strategic self-presentation, appearing confident even if you're not, having superficial charm, knowing how to navigate office politics, looking busy and important. These become really valuable skills for climbing the corporate ladder.
When the work itself feels hollow or meaningless.
People seek validation through status, titles, performance reviews. They need that external reflection of success to fill the inner void left by the lack of meaningful accomplishment.
And what about politically? You mentioned people retreated from collective action.
Lash observed that as these other spheres became unsatisfying, people turned inward towards personal transformation projects rather than, say, political organizing. Politics itself becomes less about citizens participating and more like a show.
A spectacle to be watched, as he put it. Managed by PR and image consultants.
Yeah. We end up critiquing the politicians' performances, their authenticity, rather than engaging deeply with the actual policies or systemic issues.
And all this focus on the self, on the performance, on the immediate, it contributes to another key idea, the collapse of time.
Yes, he saw the narcissistic culture as fundamentally obsessed with the present moment, with novelty. It's cut off from a sense of historical continuity, from connection to the past or responsibility to the future.
That feels very familiar, the constant churn of trends, the short attention spans.
And it has really profound consequences. One is a deep fear of aging and death. If you live only for the present, aging isn't seen as a natural process. It's the ultimate failure.
A failure to maintain the performance. Hence the booming anti-aging industry, the obsession with wellness as a way to stave off decline.
Exactly. And it also leads to an inability or maybe an unwillingness to think long term about legacy, about what we owe to future generations. If the past is just embarrassing old photos and the future is just a source of anxiety,
then living intensely for the now seems like the only rational choice. It makes a kind of grim sense, given the instability he described.
It does. There's a quote that really captures this ahistorical focus.
I hear it.
To live for the moment is the prevailing passion. To live for yourself, not for your predecessors or posterity. We are fast losing the sense of historical continuity.
That really resonates today. Okay, we've unpacked the different systems Lash identified. Now let's try to synthesize the core arguments. What are the big takeaways here? The real...
Absolutely. First, there's the vicious cycle of consumer capitalism. The system, as Lash sees it, creates inner emptiness through alienating work, fragmented communities. And then it conveniently offers consumption as the cure.
Buy this product, have this experience, and you'll feel whole again.
Right. Alienation itself becomes a commodity. The system manufactures the disease and then sells you temporary treatments, keeping you hooked.
Okay, that's one major theme. What's next?
Second is the corruption of intimacy. We touched on this. Because real vulnerability is terrifying to the fragile, managed self, genuine commitment is often avoided.
So relationships become more transactional.
Yeah, or self-protective arrangements. Calculated emotional investments. This fosters a kind of emotional coolness, detachment. And this links back to that need for validation. Remember the quote?
The one about needing an audience.
Exactly. The narcissist depends on others to validate his self-esteem. He cannot live without an admiring audience. It shows how that seeming self-involvement is actually rooted in profound dependency.
That's such a paradox. The person appearing most self-absorbed is actually the most reliant on external approval. Okay. Third theme.
This one is fascinating. The paradox of self-liberation. Lash pointed out how movements are trends that shout about freedom, authenticity, being your true self.
Yeah.
They often end up enforcing new norms. Think about mandatory sharing sessions at work or the pressure to constantly optimize your productivity and brand yourself. You're freed only to become a better adapted cog in the machine.
So the liberation just serves the needs of the corporate or bureaucratic structures.
That was his critique. And the final outcome of all this, the fourth key point, is what he called the minimal self.
Minimal.
Meaning contracted, defensive. Mm-hmm. A self primarily concerned with just coping, with psychic survival in an anxious world. The goal isn't changing the world anymore or achieving great things. Mm-hmm. It's just insulating yourself from the anxiety.
Wow. That paints a pretty bleak picture, but understanding it is powerful, right?
It is. Because it helps you, the listener, see that maybe your private anxieties aren't just your personal failings. They might be cultural symptoms. That realization itself is a kind of paradigm shift.
That's a huge relief in a way. It's not just me. It's the water we're swimming in. Okay, so how do we make this practical? How can listeners use these insights?
Well, start with personal self-awareness. Use Lash's ideas like a mirror. Ask yourself honestly, am I genuinely building inner resources or am I mostly performing wellness for others, maybe even online?
That question about social media use, is it truly about connection or is it more about chasing that narcissistic supply, those likes, that validation?
Exactly. And think about family life. Lash would probably encourage parents to resist the urge to constantly outsource parenting challenges to therapeutic experts who focus only on self-esteem management.
What's the alternative then?
Focus on fostering real competence in kids, resilience, a moral compass. Mm-hmm. Give them a connection to family history, to traditions, something solid beyond just managing their feelings moment to moment.
Building something internal, not just external validation. And finally, what about work and media?
Be critical. Look past the corporate jargon, the we're a family talk, the constant emphasis on authenticity from your employer. See how therapeutic language might be used to manage or manipulate.
And question advertising constantly, I suppose.
Definitely. Question every ad that promises some product or service will cure your deep-seated feelings of alienation or emptiness. Recognize the game.
Lash's real challenge, then, isn't just individual tinkering, it's bigger.
Yeah, his work suggests the solution isn't just more therapy or more self-optimization. It requires a conscious resistance to adapting, maybe even collective action. A fundamental rethinking of our institutions to foster genuine stability, autonomy, and connection.
You know, what surprises me most is just how prescient this 1979 book feels. He nailed so much of our current anxiety decades ago just by following the logic of where consumer capitalism and therapeutic culture were heading.
It's startlingly relevant.
For me, the biggest takeaway is that understanding the mechanism, understanding that these are shared cultural issues, not just personal flaws, that actually gives me a sense of hope. It's the first step towards maybe changing things.
I agree. The hope lies in realizing that finding meaning isn't purely an internal private task you outsource to experts. It's about re-engaging with the actual world, with community, with civic life, stepping outside that hall of mirrors.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.